Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I have an unnatural fear of fat, blonde Samoan drivers. I'm still waiting for the big boss man to return my dog, and I sat next to Alberto Del Rio at the David Schultz School of Dealing with Journalists.
Hi, I'm G. John Chase, and last night I had a rather emasculating dream in which I was in a sex sandwich with China and Asia, and quite frankly, I want a recount on the Miss Rumble 2000. There's no way Mae Young won that. I don't want to see a pair of tits that look like two plastic bags filled with mushy peas.
I'm Matt Holt, and I like Alpha Brain from onit.com. If I was going to build a website, I'd do it with Squarespace, and I think that Sherry's Berries are truly sensational.
And I'm Luke Edwards, and most people don't know that I was actually Villiano 3 and 4, also Tiger Mask 2, Psychosis 8, Mortis 3, and I'm currently portraying Jushin Thunder Liger off-Broadway.
This is the panel for the 10th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of the year 2000 next.
It's here and I like it.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 10th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke along with G. John Chase.
I'm full of Chinese food.
With Luke Edwards.
I'm full of marijuana.
And joining us for the first time, Matt Holt.
I'm full of new boy enthusiasm.
And on that fantastic note, the topic of discussion for today is, we did one of these for 1994 5 podcasts ago. We're looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly this time for the year 2000. Just to kind of give a brief overview of what this year entailed. The WWF's most profitable year in terms of wrestling profit, $84 million, $456 million of generated revenue. However, the XFL took a good chunk of the $84 million away. WCW ended up over $60 million losses, and ECW ended up about $7 million in the hole. So that was the broad overview of how this year actually went from start to finish. But we're going to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly elements artistically in North America, worldwide, if you suggested it. We've got a hell of a lot of feedback from you. We're going to try and get to all of it if we can. But first of all, good, bad, and ugly. G. John Chase, we're going to throw it to you. Go ahead. What's your good? Bad? Ugly? What's it going to be?
I'm going to go with good, because I have a real kind of positive memory of the year 2000. It was actually a very big year, because this was the first full year that I started watching wrestling again after a bit of an absence.
After your hiatus.
After my hiatus during the mid-90s.
Turncoat.
Yeah, I got back into it in 99. 2000 is when I was fully back in. And in fairness, this actually coincides with my choice, which is a good choice, and kind of an obvious one for probably most people, and that's going to be the actual quality of the pay-per-views that WWF was running in 2000. And in particular, four pay-per-views spring to mind. Royal Rumble, Backlash, Fully Loaded, and SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And for me, these kind of pay-per-views best represent everything that was good with that company, specifically from the January to August period. You know, things like Royal Rumble itself is my personal favourite Rumble of all time. And it's also...
As a pay-per-view.
Personal favourite Rumbles, 92, but the actual show itself, this is my favourite, and it holds a very special place in my heart, because it was actually the first pay-per-view that I ever watched live.
Yeah, this is just for those in America who may not get the context of this, but Channel 4 started to broadcast, which is, I guess, by American comparisons,
view,
is a network station by American comparisons, and we were getting it for free. We got a free pay-per-view on network TV over here, and it was huge, because, I mean, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I remember, not to embellish, but everybody at my school was talking about this pay-per-view the next day. Every single person, women, kids, even teachers, were talking to me about this show.
It was all the talk of all the school, and in particular with me getting back into wrestling in 99, The Rock was the man for me. He was the reason why I was getting back into wrestling, and so I just remember at school, everyone talking about, oh, The Rock's going to be in the Royal Rumble, he's going to win, and this... at that time was like a must-see big event.
Oh, for sure, but I think that, I mean, the big thing coming out of the pay-per-view for me, and I want to see what you guys think across the table here, the big thing actually coming out of it was the Cactus Triple H street fight, went in looking like it could be very, very good and blew away a lot of expectations. Mick Foley wasn't having a lot of great matches at the time, so this was a real return to form for Foley here.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly mentioned, I think on the last podcast I was on, where I was talking about
the underrated.
The Triple H Foley matches from that era, and... yeah, I mean, you don't forget that, do you? At the end of the day, a match that not only were they both great matches, and I stress both, for God's sake, people, remember that they both were there. Both great matches. But also the emotional connection that came through with the match as well, which honestly is just one of those things that almost once in a lifetime at that moment. It just caught it right. I don't know if we'll ever see it again like that. Not for me, because it's obviously going to be very different for every individual person. And that was, for me, perfectly emotionally tuned to what I wanted to see.
Yeah, I think that was just the overall presentation of that pay-per-view just astounded me. Yeah, you know, whether it was like Taz versus Kurt Angle, which I knew nothing about Taz at the time. I didn't know about ECW. Just seeing this guy choke out an Olympic athlete was just amazing to watch at the time, because at the age of 16 I didn't know the workings of the business yet. I was still kind of very kind of markish. Things like the Hardys and Dudleys, that was the first time I saw any sort of kind of hardcore match that was kind of using tables. And that match, like, it's all about like the perspective and, like, you know hindsight and nostalgia. Is for me, because that table match was probably the first tables match I ever saw, I actually hold that match a lot higher than, say, the ladder match at WrestleMania 2000 or even the TLCs that happened later on, just for some reason, because that was the first time I ever saw that kind of wrestling done before. And so it just, all the spots just astounded me.
Matt, initial gut thoughts of the Royal Rumble.
One of the things that will always stand out to me about that pay-per-view particularly is just, man, what a show that's remembered so fondly with a pretty dog average Rumble match.
The Rumble match itself is
largely forgettable. A lot of guys pulling double duty in it that had already wrestled earlier in the show. You know, at a time when we think of the roster, we're going to talk about the roster, I'm sure, later. Yeah. But, you know, that early in the year, there was still a little bit of a lack of depth. The amount of matches that are on that show that make it a really memorable pay-per-view with the name Royal Rumble, but with a pretty average Royal Rumble at the end of it.
The Royal Rumble's one of the least remembered parts of the entire show. Yeah.
It was the Rock's match. I mean, there wasn't many big names in that match compared to most Royal Rumbles, but like it was him. It was him that everyone's waiting for.
Yeah, I mean, even on TV, they were promoting as a three-horse race with Kane and Big Show as the only other real contenders.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, Kane was in there for a while, and obviously Big Show was in the final two with him. Yeah.
Now, you also mentioned Backlash, Fully Loaded, and SummerSlam. I don't know how much you want to get into the individual pay-per-views here that you mentioned feel good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Backlash has obviously been a real standout, probably actually been technically probably the best pay-per-view of that year, because that was, for me, I don't know about you guys, was actually probably the real WrestleMania of that year.
I could see that the
WrestleMania 2000 itself wasn't a bad show. It was a fairly solid show, but it was too many people were on the card.
It was underwhelming for what it could have been.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, obviously the problems with the main event as well. Backlash just kind of rectified all those things, and it, like, you know, things where it was like comedy matches with Kurt Angle and Big Show, which were entertaining, or even like the lower card matches like Dean Malenko versus Scotty Too Hotty, which was a fantastic.
It's funny that you've mentioned that. That's really memorable, strangely, now I'm thinking about it.
That's mainly
for the finish.
Yeah, mainly for the finish.
It was a very good match, though.
Yeah, and then, like, I'm sure probably some people would disagree, but strangely enough, my favourite match on that card, for personal reasons, was Eddie Guerrero versus S.A. Rios. Just for personal nostalgia of back in the day with me and my friends, we were huge S.A. Rios fans, because the only things...
You were the ones, huh?
Yeah, we were the ones. Because back then, as Liam was talking about Channel 4, we used to get Sunday Night Heat. We didn't get Raw, SmackDown. We only got Heat. And the two guys who we saw on there constantly, who we liked, was S.A. Rios and Takumi Shinoki. So we just always supported them. We always had like a little kind of cult following. Yeah, so
that's when, your main event for WrestleMania, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it is. Exactly. So when S.A. Rios actually got onto a pay-per-view, we just loved it.
I don't know where to go from
I can understand. Most people probably won't agree that Eddie Guerrero, S.A. Rios was that good, but just from personal perspective...
I definitely personally put it in the Shawn Michaels, Rick Martel camp.
It is.
We're not going to get into this personal hand-jobbing. Just because Carl buried Michaels Martel from SummerSlam doesn't mean that you can endorse. Wrongfully buried.
It's
not the best match on the show. Fully Loaded is one that I want to delve into a little bit, because I can understand why people really like this show in the sense of Rock and Benoit is a very good match. Triple H and Jericho is a very good match.
Yes.
There's a very hot crowd. Fully Loaded is that one example that really sticks out like a sore thumb, where the direction was really, it was leaning one way, you know, Benoit, Jericho, Angle, the next generation of top guys against established guys, Taker, Triple H, and Rock, and the future went 0-3, and that was not good, especially Angle, who's going to be the world champion before the end of the year, Jericho, who really, really badly needed the win, Benoit, I don't think, should have beat Rock, because Rock was the man at the time, but again, Fully Loaded, a very good show, but I think it left a very sour taste in my mouth, personally.
I think there was the ending results that show wasn't what everyone wanted, and I absolutely agree. But I think the actual, in terms of the concept, I really enjoyed it. I mean, the undercard was very good as well, you know, with Rikishi, Val Venus in the cage match, which was better than it had any right to be. But those three matches, I just remember the time just watching them thinking, wow, they've got the three established guys and they're facing the three mid-carders, the three guys who are wrestling for the Intercontinental and European title at WrestleMania. And we're going to see who's going to be leveled up. And at the time, just because of how they kind of ranked him throughout the night, I thought Benoit was in the lead. Like, they obviously thought Benoit was going to be the guy that could maybe beat The Rock, and ironically enough, it turned out to be the Kurt Angle instead. And it took how many more years? Like another 4 years for Benoit to win a title?
Yeah, four years before he even got to sniff the belt. Again, you know, thoughts opposite the table, Fully Loaded.
Memorable show for me, more from the necessary of the show, but one of the things that highlights it are good for me in pro wrestling in 2000, which was just lots of people being into it. You guys mentioned it at the time, but I've never been sort of as able to enjoy wrestling alone as I do as with groups of friends. Wrestling is always at its best when you can look over the couch or look around the room and see other people's reactions, have fun. And that's what I remember about 2000. I never watched a pay-per-view alone during that time. And I watched Fully Loaded with a big group of friends. One of the guys, his parents had a summer house. We dragged the TV out there. Yeah. We all, you know, stayed in there with sleepovers. And it was an amazing, you know, that social experience is what I remember about 2000 more than anything.
I think that was the great thing about 2000, because 2000 wrestling was so popular at the time. It wasn't just the wrestling fans that were watching the shows, it was also the casual viewer as well that was watching it. And so, like, those groups of people watching pay-per-views was a lot bigger than it is now. And I mean, like, you know, just to finalize my point with SummerSlam, I mean, I think a lot of people know that SummerSlam 2000 was probably one of the better SummerSlams, you know, whether it's the main event with Rock, Triple H, and Angle, and the whole Stephanie McMahon love affair, or even to the more probably even famous first ever TLC match.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Which is fantastic. And also, you know, just the little kind of matches on the card that I enjoyed, you know, that involved, you know, Chris Benoit and Jericho. Those matches are elevated due to the time period in which they had them in, which you're watching these crowds go apeshit. Like, the pop that Too Cool and Rikishi are getting against Right to Censor equals any kind of pop that any main eventer gets now.
Yeah,
today.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean,
it did also have, and maybe this could be thrown out as an ugly point, the horrific Taz job to Jerry the King Lawler at SummerSlam, which really
Taz was starting to get buried way before then.
I know, but that one really stuck.
Was that like the Skittle jar?
Yeah, the candy jar.
Yeah, JR hit him. Yeah, and like, was it like King turns around and goes, "Where's my candy jar gone?" You know, at some point.
Do you know, Liam, though, I gotta say, I'm gonna have to come in with the first disagreement point. I dug that feud so much.
Taz and Lawler.
Yeah,
I like the feud.
I was behind, like, yeah, the job was a crazy idea, but actually, at the point where I wasn't as fussed about like pushes and things like that, I was like, yeah, you know, those picked on commentators got their own back, you know, the wily old guys got their own back on these bullies. I dug it, you know. You can't look at a show like that now, but back then I could.
Alright, so moving on to your feedback, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to first get to the great Rick Morris from the FDH Lounge, who mentions that for the good, until it hit the black hole of Triple H Rikishi nothingness in the fall, the WWF booking was almost historically good throughout the year, save for WrestleMania. Bad. I was going to say the Goldberg heel turn, as they quashed maybe the last difference maker they had, but even that atrocity is dwarfed by he's breaking the script. The whole dynamic of everything is fake, except what you're seeing here, is the worst Russoism ever, and we all know how much ground that covers. Vince Russo, when you look at this year, because 2000, let's face it, is a very populist choice for this podcast.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of common themes. Good, you're going to get a lot of WWF. Bad, you're going to get a lot of WCW. Ugly, you're going to get a lot of Vince Russo's decisions. So I think, again, the Goldberg heel turn, the they're breaking the script, Kevin Nash, Goldberg, Steiner debacle, one of the absolute most putrid angles in wrestling history on a major league level.
That was one of the worst decisions they ever made when it came to booking. I mean, like,
I don't know if you've seen the promo that Kevin Nash does on Thunder. Yeah, there's a lot of nods around the table about how, you know, I'm going over. That's what's going to happen. I'm telling you all right now, I'm going over. It's like, what business does this have on wrestling television? This is one of those things where I think that, you know, the biggest misread of Russo was thinking that everybody knew everything and looked at it the way that, you know, guys like us do, which is just completely not the case.
Liam, I hate to disagree with you on that point. And I know that some people told me I'm a bit of a contrarian on this podcast, but I actually spent some time earlier trying to think of a defense for this wretched bullshit.
Okay, I'm keen to hear this.
Honestly, I drew a complete blank. I cannot fathom, cannot even slightly comprehend any upside that they could have thought was going to come from it. I'm literally just aghast at the whole thing. And sadly, that meant I had to do a lot of research and had to watch a lot of those promos and that kind of era. And Jesus, you ruined my weekend, Liam. You ruined my weekend. Everybody who's listening to this, you guys also, you ruined my weekend. God, it was horrible.
The story of 2000 WCW was misfire after misfire after bad call after bad call. The Ugly from Rick Morris. The continuing downward spiral of WCW. Too often overlooked in all of the death of WCW commentary over the years are the constant resets, which shows a complete lack of respect for viewers. No matter how dire the situation or how bad the product, evolutionary, rather than revolutionary, changes in direction are necessary, rather than actively encouraging fans to forget everything you've seen previously. Plus, you could get pretty drunk playing WCW Bingo on the WWE Network, going randomly to different pay-per-views that year and doing a shot every time a wrestler has turned face or heel since the last time you've seen them. This, the restart... Oh, yeah, I might as well could transition right now into my own personal bad, which is that April 10th Nitro where Russo and Bischoff took over, and you could just see the writing on the wall that this was... Because yeah, even going in, this was following the Kevin Sullivan 3 months back in charge where it just went back to the fucking dregs. It was Hogan in red and yellow, Flair and Luger as a heel tandem.
Yeah.
You know, it was just Terry Funk being brought back in, and it just paled in comparison to what was going on at the WWF at the time. It looked like a dying company. Yeah. It really did. Mm-hmm. It started to look like the AWA. And as fate would have it, when Russo and Bischoff's, you know, the rumors of them coming back in, it was the last gasp of, well, maybe this could be it. Maybe this could be something. Maybe this can kickstart things. I mean, you watch that first Nitro. I remember watching it at my cousin's house and just having this sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach. Because I was a WWF guy. But when I saw WCW that Nitro, I remember getting a real sour taste in my mouth. It's like, they're going to die and this is not a good thing. Absolutely not a good thing. I think it's a wretched show. And if there is one thing that I could say should be the hallmark of WCW's death, it's the scene from that show when Ric Flair, the WCW franchise, is lying on the mat and Vince Russo is standing over him crotch chopping. It's the funniest, most horrific scene you'll ever see.
Yeah,
the resets in general, again, you know, post-radicals, the old guard comes in, Russo and Bischoff, they vacate all the belts.
That was the ultimate in resets. That was just terrible. Vacating everything.
Yeah, nothing, you know, thanks for watching before, but it doesn't matter. Now we're going to start from day one.
Yeah, and I think that the pluralism of resets is the killer there. One, maybe history might have looked okay on if it had worked.
Yeah.
But it didn't, and then they tried it again and again and numerous times. Yeah. And yeah, you know, this is like, you know, there isn't a reset button. I totally agree with the feedback that they should have tried to build out of it, not try and dig, you know, straight out of it. It should have slowly evolved and changed into something new, not just this whole... That was one that opened with everyone in the ring.
Throwing the Scrabble board up in the air and that kind of a thing. Yeah. Sid, where's your scissors from Eric Bischoff, which was just... Joey Batson says, for the good, the Attitude Era in full swing. The bad, Vince Russo, the ugly, the Monday Night War for Nitro. Pretty succinct and again, pretty common thoughts across the table, I think. Big Bad Mick from Pro Wrestling Only, for the good, says, incredibly fond memories of so much of the WWF in January through August. The match I'm most likely to go back and watch again and again is Jericho versus Triple H at Fully Loaded. Pretty fantastic little last man standing match. Yep. The bad, things did dip a little after SummerSlam, and abandoning the Triple H angle Steph story was very disappointing indeed.
Yes.
And this was the big angle, the big summer angle was Triple H. Even though Rock was the champion, it was the slow burn of angle Triple H Steph. And they did that great scene on the final SmackDown when Kurt finally kissed Steph and the cat was out of the bag.
Yeah.
And then post SummerSlam, it was just all downhill.
I think they it started to go downhill after SummerSlam. I think Triple H and Kurt Angle did have a match at Unforgiven,
and it was so underwhelming.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, because obviously myself picking the January to August time has been particularly good. Those last 4 months for me, it was starting to get a little weak, and I'm actually going to probably state a rather controversial.
Well, but before you get to the controversial, it will tie in later, trust me.
Oh, okay. I'll save it.
Like an episode of Seinfeld, it'll all make sense in the end. Okay. So, again, that thing there, the whole the issue about SummerSlam, the ratings did slowly start to dip post-SummerSlam. So, this thought here from Big Bad Mick is not necessarily an exclusive thought. The Ugly, Mae Young at the Rumble. appalling. You didn't mention this in your pay-per-view recap.
No, I didn't, no, but I think I hopefully did mention it at the start of the show. Yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Well, I guess we've got to put it in now. Because
yeah,
I
know. Yes, yes, that's the plan.
I mean,
Jesus Christ, that was just appalling. But there's this funny thing about that with the, like, with the bikini contest. I mean, I remember just them obviously trying to make a big deal out of Kat because she was wearing bubble wrap.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, well, not to kind of rain on anyone's parade, but she pretty much went full topless the previous month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So bubble wrap, I don't really give a crap about.
Well, as it was supposed to be Lawler, it was Lawler's idea. Yeah,
of course it was.
And he put Kat in the bubble wrap and showed Vince, and it was apparently supposed to be completely see-through. And Vince, you know, kind of said, I'm not so sure about this one, Jerry. We kind of got heat last month. So they made it add like another 5 layers of bubble wrap. So it was basically just a bikini, and it really wasn't that special.
It was rubbish. Yeah, particularly when
unflattering and unattractive. Bikini.
Yeah. When like Jackie was kind of wearing a rather interesting bikini as well. I'm pretty certain she was actually wearing a mankini.
I vaguely remember both the bikini contest and the main event, that the sort of blood and brutality in it being the cause for the next show that was shown on network TV, which I think would have been Backlash.
It was Backlash
being on a 50 minute delay
because
50 minutes, like, hey, look, what are you going to have one really long thing that you need to censor for 50 minutes, you know, like maybe like a 10 minute delay, but 50 minutes,
it's alright, the old lady's got her boobs restrained, you know, she's not going to appear again.
Mad Dog from Pro Wrestling Only for the Ugly mentions the Radicals leaving WCW. That's when I saw that it was never getting better. You could always kind of tell yourself that WCW had better workers even if the product was bad, but that really felt like a shift, and suddenly the WWF had a much better product in every regard. I know this is pretty much, again, surely common thought around the table, but the Radicals leaving was, I mean, you can look at it as good for the WWF, but a massive negative for WCW. Yeah, they had very, very little left.
Absolutely. I mean, everything he says is absolutely right. That was actually going to be one of my goods as well before I chose pay-per-views. The Radicals for me, as stated, was a game changer. I think they were the final piece of the puzzle for WWF in terms of their mid-card. They still had a decent mid-card and they had a very good tag team scene developing, but they still needed just those key players.
One thing that it never made sense what was so radical?
Why were the Radicals?
You know,
they were so rad.
Like, the Radicals.
Maybe this is about their politics we didn't know, you know.
I think they all had matching outfits. That's probably the radical part about them.
I don't think they did they?
Yeah, they all wore purple.
Maybe for one night.
I remember that night.
They were at front row in the street clothes.
Yeah, they were all wearing matching trousers. Yeah. It was really impressive.
Perry sat in the pork pie hat at ringside.
Oh, yeah. The only unfortunate thing with the Radicals is that angle very quickly died.
Quickly, that's like fucking one episode, and they beat them all on SmackDown.
They beat them all on SmackDown, and they did the thing where they were given contracts anyway because they turned them heel, went heel on Mick Foley, who tried to bring them in,
which leads us very naturally into a segue.
Oh, well, there you go.
Bigelow 34 from Pro Wrestling Elite, the good, the Dallas 10-man tag, where indeed DX and the Radicals are on the same side, as you mentioned.
Yep.
Luke, I know you watched this match very recently.
I did. I'd forgotten all about it, but the moment I went back and watched that match doing research for 2000, I remembered, and I swear to God, every damn move.
Yeah.
I was so happy watching that match. You know, it's in that kind of joyful, gleeful, fucking no cares happiness. Anyone who went to see Guardians of the Galaxy may have had that kind of thing. It's just happy time. That's what this match gave me.
Yeah.
There's this shine that goes on forever and the crowd fucking loves it and everything is great. And while that match is on my computer, on my television, while I'm watching that match, everything's okay.
the crowd is so molten hot for that match, and that helps make it a lot. But I mean, it's just a shining example because WCW didn't think these guys were worth a fuck. They're on this incredible main event, and the ratings were just absolutely through the roof for that 10-man tag.
We were still getting Raw on a 4-day delay here in the UK at that point.
Yeah, we were getting it Fridays at 10 o'clock.
This match was like the epitome of Tuesday morning, you read results, and you were like, man, this week cannot go quick enough. It's like, you know, the reports talked about this match like, you know, the second coming of Christ, and you were like, it's Tuesday, I've got to get to Friday, you know, and school just flew by. But
yeah, Bigelow 34 is the backtrack. He also mentioned that WrestleMania and King of the Ring sucking during such a hot time was his negative. King of the Ring was a real disappointment.
Yeah, King of the Ring, WrestleMania has got a bit of a bad rap, but King of the Ring, yeah, I'll actually agree that
just because
a,
that just because
good
again, and I think the reason why WrestleMania and King of the Ring do stand out, because now that we've brought the Radicals into the equation in this discussion, the roster in the drifts was now a hell of a lot more robust than it was previously.
Very much so.
Best they've had in years.
When you compare WrestleMania 15 to 16 and you look at the rosters comparatively speaking, WrestleMania 16 should have blown away WrestleMania 15, and it was still significantly better, don't get me wrong, but it should have been one of the all time great WrestleManias, and it wasn't. Yeah. King of the Ring should have been one of the all time best one night tournaments, and it wasn't, for the roster of guys they had at that time. And yeah, the main event where The Rock wins the WWF Championship by pinning Vince McMahon and not Triple H, that was another kind of a
loads of guys go out in the first round of the King of the Ring that you really would have thought gone through.
Yeah, I mean the King of the Ring itself, actually, you know, there was a lot worse King of the Rings in terms of the actual tournament itself. I mean, Kurt Angle winning was absolutely the right choice,
but again, we're grading on the curve.
Yeah, and there was other kind of personally I rather enjoyed the dumpster match. Was it a dumpster match with Dudley's versus DX? Yeah, I have enjoyed that. I think the two key matches that everybody hates is obviously the evening gown match with Pat and Briscoe,
which
is horrific. Which is freaking awful thing.
That was
the only good thing about that match. Nothing. Was that Crash Holly got the title back at the end of the night.
Even then,
that was a good point.
It took so long to get to that point. The fucking sanitary towel to the face spot.
Yeah, that was awful.
Patterson stink face spot.
Well, actually, the sanitary towel to the face spot is one that will go down in history, and it's used throughout the Indies even today. Yeah. And more often than a super kick, honestly.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. You need to get out more.
And also, that main event, as you stated, was just like the wrong way of
it was a fun match, but it was just, again, just didn't hit the buttons people were hoping for.
No.
Doho 5 and Pro Wrestling going for a little bit of a different flavour. Good. Ogawa vs Hashimoto, Misawa vs Akiyama from February. I've seen the Misawa Akiyama match especially is one of my personal favourites. It's one of those matches that when you watch it back now, Akiyama's, the story of the match is Akiyama working on Misawa's neck, and given how things turn out, that's a little bit
close to the mark.
It's a little close to the mark. It's a little awkward to watch. It's a fucking fantastic match. The heat's awesome. The pacing's phenomenal. The spots on the ring apron are very, very, again, horrifying to the tune of, now when you look back, it's not so enjoyable as it was at the time, unfortunately. Bad All Japan becoming Noah. A lot of the wrestling in Japan copying all the annoying parts of All Japan's style without taking the good parts or just doing a bad job of it. Of course, this is the massive exile from All Japan to form Pro Wrestling Noah in May of 2000. Again, not necessarily so much bad for this year, but the following year they start to incorporate a lot of kind of WWF traits, having DQs and countouts and stuff that they hadn't done previously that really kind of put a bit of a stain on the product a little bit.
This is definitely kind of like, for me anyway, like the real beginning of All Japan not being competitive anymore when it comes to that market. I mean, it was just a downward. I mean, this Noah, I can't remember if it was the first cull that they had, but it certainly wasn't the last that they had either.
No, but it was just very sad. After years and years of stability in terms of the two big promotions in Japan, this was the first, you know, kind of break from tradition. We're seeing the evolution. It's not necessarily a good one. Innovator from TPWW Forums mentions for the good the Cactus Jack versus Triple H Royal Rumble Street Fight. Obviously, won the match. It's funny because I did see some retrospective feedback on this match that didn't like it so much in hindsight. I think it might be, I don't know if it's just nitpicking or what, but
they're nitpicking.
I worry that some people watch the match in isolation without thinking about the build and that kind of thing, because the match relies on the build as much as anything. I mean, it's still a great match in my opinion on its own.
I do think so too.
But honestly, you got to make sure you watch those videos leading up to it, get those Raws leading up to it. It's all worth watching, and it's the build that gets to the destination.
I think it's...
Was it Raw or SmackDown where we got the reveal of Cactus Jack?
It was SmackDown.
Pulls it. That is just money.
Isn't it? It's magic. Absolute magic.
You need to kind of been watching WWF at the time in 99 as well, where you're just seeing like Mick Foley not performing at the best of his ability, and then suddenly almost
becoming
just
the laughing stock that he was as mankind.
Almost like overnight, just like returning, like the great Mick Foley, you know, like was just like he was back.
It's funny when you talk back about Royal Rumble, maybe this is something I should have mentioned before, but it'll tie in, you know, anyway. 1999, in retrospect, for the WWF, sucked. It was really horrible. I'm not a big fan of 1999 WWF. There are some high points, but, I mean, compared to 2000, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, night and day.
It is night and day. The product, the choices of the guys they push, it's pretty rotten. And again, Mick Foley becoming that kind of laughing stock, wrestling the Hollies. Nothing against the Hollies, but you know, he was in Val Venus, and then moving into this feud with Triple H. So it was red hot, and this was the, you know, this was the feud that made Triple H.
Name a really shit hot pay per view like the equivalent of the Rumbles and Backlash 2000, where what was the really knockout pay per view that they had in 99?
SummerSlam might be as close as you know, had a hot event.
I guess
you know, matches on the undercard, but actually no, it had the Kiss My Ass match, didn't it?
Yeah, the Kiss My
I take that back, sorry.
Yeah. The bad innovator mentions Full Brawl. Goldberg versus Kevin Nash versus Scott Steiner is billed that these guys won't follow the script. The Goldberg walking out, if you need to take the jackknife at the end of the match, by the way. I know that we've already had this one before, but fuck's sake. Ugly. David Arquette wins the WCW title. Somebody had to mention it.
Yeah, course,
I'm glad somebody did. I'm not really sure if there's anything we can say on this that hasn't been mentioned in ad nauseum.
Yeah.
I will say, Vince Russo, for all the USA Today defense he tries to make, fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what can you
don't
say
don't be the contrarian that tries to make something good out of this, Luke.
No, don't even do it, Luke. Don't. Don't lower yourself.
Oh, Carl's going to hurt me. oh, God. I think my thing at the time is I go back. I wasn't that old. I don't know how old I was at that point. But, you know, as a kid watching it, I suppose it was. I watched WCW as a secondary thing. I was a WWF watcher. And it wasn't the worst thing in the world to me, because as a child, I didn't understand the legacy of the belt. Sure. And if you remove the legacy of the belt from the concept, then it isn't the worst move in the world. And that, to me, has always just appealed. Well, I guess that Russo's, they just didn't understand the concept of the legacy of that belt and what that belt really stood for.
Just don't see how anybody with a fucking smidgen of a clue about the wrestling business could think that's a good idea. Legacy of the belt be damned. It's like, the famous Russo, the belt's just a prop line, which I fucking hate. Huh. It makes me just want to strap him into a chair and beat him with hammers. Innovator always also mentioned that the Undertaker's trousers from Survivor Series. Do you remember that?
Oh wow!
My memory.
I had completely
snake get your skin fucking trousers
for one night only.
Yeah, one night
snake
only.
Snake skin trousers from the Undertaker.
We're gonna
you
wait.
Saucy sod.
You're gonna get a live reaction. This makes great radio, folks.
Okay, that's a bad picture. That you could believe that was Chris Stratus.
Yeah, with
you
the
could believe that was Chris.
Oh, is that them? Holy cow, they're ugly.
Trish Stratus. If you squint, that's the weirdest damn picture.
Do you think that might
rock and roll?
Do you think that might have been a bet? You lost a bet. Do you think you had to wear those because you lost a bet?
It has to be that, you know, at SummerSlam, okay, this is your 15th try. Can you have a good match with Kane? Bad News Gunter from TPWW Forums. The good, the Radicals debut in the WWE, the flip side of the coin. The bad, ECW and WCW continue to decline in terms of business and quality. ECW has not been mentioned so far in this podcast. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on ECW in the year 2000, gentlemen?
For me, it was always that there were still some bright spots amongst a fairly failing overall product.
Yeah.
One of the things that I always remember was, you know, some really legendary matches that kind of came off like stuff like their TV and house shows. The Tajiri and Tajiri Sakosi.
Tajiri Sakosi used to be arena. I was going to mention
an insane match that became the stuff of legend. That you know, you had to track down something that had it on and things. And so I think that, you know, it wasn't that they were completely bereft of matches that were worth watching, but man, a directionless product with some guys at the top of the card that just weren't carrying.
Yeah,
things.
They had no business being there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like ECW, you've got to remember, whilst it did start to fade in 2000. The reason why they were struggling was because they lost four of their headline acts all in one go.
It wasn't all in one go, it was spread over a period of six months.
But it's enough to damage a company. If you spent years putting a lot of effort into people like Taz and Dudley's, who went to WWF, Mike Awesome, who was their champion at the time in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. leaving for WCW, and then Rob Van Dam getting injured, when you lose your four biggest acts, you're going to struggle. And you can see that by the fact that they suddenly, you know, rose like just incredible to champion, and suddenly, you know, towards the end of the year, it was credible Lynn, Jerry Lynn, and Steve Corino that was battling for the titles, because they just didn't have those big names anymore because everyone was jumping ship. So, I mean, you absolutely called it when you were saying about, like, there were still bright spots and, you know, like, certain things with, like, some tag matches, you know, Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck versus, you know, FBI or, you know, Super Crazy and Jerry Lynn, whatever. And I think probably lean to a point that you wanted to make as well with Tajiri.
Being
a particular standout as well.
Yeah, Tajiri had a really great 2000. He's one of the ones I was kind of batting around in my head for the good of the year. The match with the Hardcore Heavenly just beats Carino's ass. It's just fantastic. The whole thing of him being so good that the network doesn't want him because he wins the television championship. He loses it back to Rhino.
Yeah.
But it all ties into the fact that the ugliest part of the year for ECW was the Mike Awesome loses the belt to Taz in such a horrific fashion, you know, and then Taz shows up on SmackDown and gets beaten by Triple H, and Tommy Dreamer gets a pedigree for no other reason than Triple H wants to give a guy a pedigree.
That wasn't ECW's fault. That wasn't Paul Heyman's fault.
It doesn't matter.
That's pretty much everyone else. I mean, Heyman's hands were tied with that.
In its principle, the Taz coming back to win the belt thing sounds awesome on paper.
Yeah.
No pun intended. It was just the fact that what didn't really work was the fact that they did this title. What was it like?
Yeah.
Awesome rolls out the ring, Scarpa's out down the side. Yeah. It, you know, what it should have been is a match that gave the crowd, you know, something that they were what expecting. You know, in principle, I don't disagree with bringing Taz back. I think it was a pretty cool idea.
Idea on paper, but again, execution. It was one of those things where it's like, you know, and say what you want to say, but the damage that did to the belts was absolutely massive.
Yeah.
And the brand in general never really recovered after that.
I think it was probably did just as much damage was not only Taz quickly winning the belt, but Awesome, but then him quickly losing it to Tommy Dreamer, and then Tommy Dreamer losing it to Just Incredible, like, straight away. And it was just that quick, like, sequence of title losses, title changes, sorry, that I think that's what really affected the title.
Yeah.
Ugly for Bad News Gertner from TPWW. The WrestleMania 16 main event was awful. Again, this is one of the big things at the time where it was so clearly destined to be Rock and Triple H. And for whatever reason, I'm bound and determined, it was because they had that fucking McMahon in every corner idea, and they wanted to shoehorn that idea in, no matter how inorganic it was. Mick Foley and Big Show had no business in that match whatsoever.
Or Jericho, as it was proposed at one point.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Jericho, and that shouldn't have been the case either. It was Rock and Triple H, but they wanted that idea, so therefore we got the match we got, and again, it wasn't until Backlash that we got the match that, and the outcome we were supposed to have.
Can I, like, one question to throw to you guys? Where do you stand on the whole Triple H leaving Mania as a heel champion? Because I really dug that switch at the time. You know, the fact that we'd always been so used, like, whether it had been him and Rock going one-on-one, I actually loved the idea that, you know, as the show finished that night and I was absolutely knackered, I had to be up for school the next morning, I was like, wow, you know, a bad guy just walked out of WrestleMania champion. That's crazy. I still like that, despite the slightly atrocious main event.
it was a weird one, because obviously at the time, I was a big Rock mark, so I freaking hated the decision at the end. It was the worst way to end that show for me. But kind of looking back on it, I mean, yeah, I guess it stood out. It also continued that whole build that they were giving to Triple H, that Mick Foley started by putting him over on two consecutive pay-per-views, and it was just that now Triple H walks out of WrestleMania the champion. It was just another step in building Triple H into that solid main event.
Okay, JBL Goat from Wrestling Forum, excuse the name. The good Mark Madden, one of the greatest heel killer commentators of all time. I can't endorse that at all. Mark Madden, and maybe it was Russo's style of, you know, yeah, the shoot names and all that stuff, and his little inside jokes that was the sound of one hand clapping. Mark Madden was just fucking dreadful. For the good, this was. And he also mentioned Bash at the Beach 2000. The reason I'm bringing this up is because Matt Holt is going to step in with his choice. Good, bad, ugly, what are you giving us?
I'm going to go with ugly for Bash at the Beach 2000, but I need to kind of preface this by saying that on a scale of good to bad to ugly, generally as a rule of thumb, it's kind of a declining scale where good is good, bad is bad, and man, ugly is just dire.
Ugly's the earth's core, you know?
But for me, I always see good, the bad, and the ugly as different. Good is good, bad is bad, fairly self-explanatory. Ugly for me is something that is probably bad with some redeeming qualities that almost make it ugly, so it's bad that you can enjoy watching still.
Yeah.
And I attended Bash at the Beach 2000 live. I was on holiday, family holiday in Florida, got to go to the show, walked up on the day and bought some third row tickets, as you generally could have.
Is there anything more?
2000, folks, white hot on there, white hot. And we just walked up, we hung around outside a bit, met Van Hammer. He was very nice.
Van Hammer!
Van Hammer preparing for his match with three McDonald's value meals.
Was he the ticketeer?
He was, no. But we, yeah, you know, I got to go to that show. Yeah, we all know the legacy it has, all the things that were horrendous about it. Graveyard matches that, I mean, you think that graveyard match was bad watching it on the pay-per-view. Try being in there with, like, just an arena full of rednecks who were like, I'll tell you, watch a damn movie! You know, it was just madness. Just, you know, I always remember that show. A guy two seats in front of us he was trying to have a cigarette while in the arena, which didn't go down well with security, so he tried to hide it under his wife's leg. It was still lit. He tried to hide it under his wife's leg. It was just, you know, as only Florida can. It really just was just a great venue, you know, a show I enjoyed. You look back over the card, it has a, you know, for me, I got to tick off seeing a lot of important guys from history, you know, yeah, not particularly in great matches, but it was the sort of thing you couldn't take your eyes off. It was just amazing to be there and experience the insanity that
the
was.
What was the live reaction to Russo's famous...
mass confusion, I think, more than anything. You know,
imagine,
like,
that.
Yeah, people just not really, you know, 90% of the arena not getting it. I went with a friend who, I'd been a lapsed wrestling fan until 99 and got back in. He had stayed a lapsed wrestling fan. He just happened to be on holiday with me and my family and came with me. Obviously, he was enjoying seeing loads of guys that he remembered from when we were watching 93, 94, 95. But what he was just confused. He's completely lost. Yeah. What's going on? You know, I don't get it. And we popped a little bit when there were some swear words, you know. Big bald bastard, was it? I think.
Yeah,
it was,
you
there.
Big bald son of a
yeah,
bitch.
Yeah, big bald son of a bitch. And but yeah, you know, one thing I do have to say in defense of, man, when Booker went over at the end, I don't know how it comes across on the paper, you haven't watched it back for years, but in the arena, there was a real feel of, like, new beginning. You know, we were all walking out, talking to each other, oh, we got to see the young guys go over to the young guys.
It's finally
Booker
happened.
Yeah, you know, and we felt it. You know, so the opinion has changed to it over the years. I can only testify to what it felt like, you know, in that arena that night. People thought that it was something new and something different with Booker going over. You know, we were high-fiving each other and things like that, and people were getting smoked out by cigarettes that they shouldn't have had.
from a pay-per-view perspective,
yeah, the opposite of mine.
In no way comes up. Well, you graded this as ugly anyway, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I don't try and defend it as something good.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's memorable. Ugly's the word in that kind of car crash kind of way. I'd certainly say. I mean, it's. I can't separate the show from the end. You know what I mean? It's like, I've got Bash of the Beach 2000 in my head, and I watched that recently when we had the free network thing, because watching bad WCW was what I clearly felt like doing. Because, you know, I'm a bloody idiot, is what I am. But, can't separate.
Yeah, as good as the WWF pay-per-views were in 2000, yeah. WCW had some fucking dogs.
Just... I mean, you know, I was in Vegas the night... I was in Vegas when Halloween Havoc was on. You
2000.
Know, yeah. Mm. Well, Henny and Halloween...
That show's fucking awful. That is an awful
show. And, you know, I was in Vegas and I left the night before and... I feel like I dodged a bullet. But you know what? Having heard your story, I feel like maybe I would have got some good out of it.
The best this was, I wasn't staying in Daytona. I made my parents drive us to Daytona. Just so they went and hung out at the beach for the day. But yeah, I was a glutton for punishment. But hey, third row tickets on the day.
Yeah, you can't
get them, folks.
Can't say fairer than that. And you had to pay, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, maybe they were giving tickets away. And I was just a gullible Englishman who walked up and was like, take my money. So...
All right, Attitude 316 from Wrestling Form, so you can pretty much guess what his perspective is going to be. The good, Rock versus Triple H feud, made for some of the best television, period. Actually, every pay-per-view in almost every WWF program from spring to summer was amazing. The bad, WrestleMania wasn't great, and Rock being screwed wasn't ideal, but it made for great TV nonetheless. No Mercy 2 I'll rank in the bad, because the crowd was flat for some reason. The Triple H angle Steph storyline deserved to be payoff, but didn't get it. The Kane-YTJ rivalry over spilt coffee was lazy and just plain
Jesus Christ, was that 2000?
Yeah, it's the end of
2000. Oh my God, I've forgotten about that!
The writing started to get really, really lazy post-SummerSlam, and that leads us to the ugly here. The man that ran down Austin was Rikishi, also WCW. But the man that ran down Austin was Rikishi. This is something that you want to get into, Chase, about the noticeable shift in the product.
Yes, I mean, obviously, earlier I mentioned about, again, I'll state, the positives of the quality of pay-per-views from, you know, January through to August. And as people kind of notice in here, there was a noticeable dip that comes in on in September onwards. And I'm going to probably say something that's quite controversial here. I think the dip began with Austin returning. I love 2000 so much because Rock was finally the man. He was the man in that company. He was the number one babyface. And when Austin came back, I was like, no. I don't want this. I don't want. I said, no, you've had your time, and it's now Rock's time. And I just felt like immediately they'll just put, again, didn't understand the workings of the business. Again, they'll just immediately start pushing Austin again. And it's like it was the Austin show all over again. I thought, no. You need to work to get back into the main event again. Like, The Rock is the main event now.
Prove yourself, kid.
Yeah. The Rock,
you're the biggest draw in the history of the business.
Who did he ever beat?
Exactly. I should just remind you, Liam, that I was 16. At the time, and I didn't know the workings in and outs, but from just a guy who just watching wrestling for what it was, I was just like, why is this guy getting preferential treatment when he's been away for, like, was it 9 months, something like that, and The Rock is the main guy. It's like you needed to earn that spot back again, and I just kind of noticed that dip happening as Austin was coming back, because for me it didn't feel like Austin fitted in anymore.
I will say that I think, before I move on to the thoughts across the table, I think more than just Austin's return was the plan they had for him upon his return.
Oh, yeah,
programming him with a heel turn, Rikishi, and sticking him straight in there with Triple H, which was just, you know, two forces that didn't need, one who should have been doing the job and one who didn't want to do the job at Survivor Series. Across the table, what do you think?
Two things. One, just popping onto Rikishi, in that... it comes back to that Raw match, which surprised me, from 2010, man, we talked about earlier, and how ridiculously over Rikishi was in that match. And he was over at the time. It wasn't the right kind of over that turns into a nice heel turn.
No.
But I guess that's what they were going... I don't know. I really never really understood that. But
was he the original choice, Rikishi?
That's a good question. I don't know if that's ever come out, per se.
I don't think they ever had a fucking clue. I just think, I know it was Stephanie McMahon's idea.
Yeah.
And apparently it was like one of her first big decisions that it was going to be Rikishi.
Because when did they mention the whole thing, the driver had blonde hair? Was that at the time of September, October, or was that actually a lot earlier?
No. That
wasn't there some shitty cops on Raw that came around interviewing people?
Yeah, and detectives.
And Austin thought it was Billy Gunn, because Billy Gunn was returning about the same time, wasn't it? And obviously the connection with Triple H and
Billy was coordinated to drive the car.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been sober.
Billy was the one that said they had blonde hair.
But it just seems so weird because, I mean, like, returning Rikishi was just like, felt like such the wrong thing at the time, because Rikishi had his best year in 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down. He was so over that guy. And, like, you know, he almost won King of the Ring and so on, and he was in lots of high profile matches. And then as soon as they turned him heel and he changed his music, you know, I'm a bad man. You know, what that kind of music. All his momentum. Gone. Killed, all the momentum gone.
Killed his career.
Yeah, it did. Absolutely.
NXT 83 from Wrestling Forum for the ugly mentions. Rikishi's ass was pretty horrible on the close up on distinct face. The one Billy Gunn, just awful.
The one.
So we're equating the one Billy Gunn and Rikishi's ass. You know, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
what version of Billy Gunn did you like the most? Did you like the Smoking Guns Billy Gunn? Did you like Badass Billy Gunn, Mr. Ass Billy Gunn, or the one Billy Gunn? Billy and Chuck?
Here's the thing with Billy Gunn is I have no problem with all of those, really, except for the Billy Gunn bit. I mean, any of the other bit, that's fine, but Billy Gunn, doesn't he? It's a little bit of a problem in those gimmicks was the Billy Gunn part.
Yeah.
Great name here. Serious for a Minute from Wrestling Forum. The Good, Backlash, Edge, Christian, Dudley's, Hardys, Jericho, Benoit, and The Showster. Out of all the things I just mentioned,
wow.
The one that raises the eyebrows.
Again, because it was on a memorable pay-per-view.
Yeah. Fucking, okay, the tag team division has to be mentioned here. Edge, Christian, Dudley's, Hardys, some of the best. Very much a renaissance for tag team wrestling. Edge and Christian were phenomenal this year. Awesome promos. The Dudleys were extremely, extremely over. Powerbomb and Mae Young through the table off the stage, which you've got to mention.
And the great thing with those three teams is how different they were and the programs that they worked in. Well, not just the obvious style difference, but I mean, Edge and Christian were just hilariously entertaining due to their kind of goofy heel gimmick. You know, the Hardys obviously had like the cool factor to them. The Dudleys had that whole storyline about putting women through tables, which was like strangely hugely over in 2000. But I mean, I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, obviously those three names are always going to be brought up when it comes to tag team wrestling in 2000. But there were other good tag teams, and there were other good tag team matches.
Too Cool was over too like cool, the APA were over like crazy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Too Cool,
and that's what I think is always a great thing about that. That tag team period is that you had such varied tag teams, so many different types of tag team. It was really a throwback to sort of like, you know, Southern territories that had just great different tag teams. You know, white meat tag teams, some tough guy, you know, tag teams, big man tag team, you know, and wow, what a melting pot, what a perfect storm.
Yeah. Also, another little kind of match I like when you look at from a reaction point of view is I think it was the first match of Judgment Day, which was the Kurt Angle, Edge and Christian versus
Too Cool
and Rikishi, wasn't it? I mean, Jesus Christ. Watch that match just for the crowd reaction. The crowd are going freaking nuts for
it. That's another great pay-per-view. Judgment Day 2000 is a fantastic pay-per-view and does deserve to be up there with the ones you mentioned before. Alrighty, That Poor Bastard from Pro Wrestling Only says, the good, getting to see William Regal take on a young Bryan Danielson live here in Jonesboro when Bryan was in developmental. Very interesting, very unique.
Yeah,
and a different one.
Didn't know he was in developmental.
I like this. Yeah. Him and Spanky and Shuba Schultz and Lance Cade were signed all at the same time at Shawn Michaels' insistence, and then they all got fired. The bad. WWE closing down the Memphis part of developmental, which effectively ended decent wrestling coming to my area to this day. The ugly WCW, the entirety of it. So many wrestle crap moments. My heart is still a little broken.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I mean, it's such a sad, slow, agonizing demise, and it's never been replaced to this day. It is. It's like suicide.
Unfortunately for me, I watched WCW most of it anyway, like highlights every week. And you compare WCW 2000 even to WCW 98, and they're completely different promotions. They really are. I mean, it went from being major league to minor league, it felt like.
Yeah. Art DDP. I loved the WWF in 2000 and still watch it from time to time. It was the only product I watched week to week that year, as ECW was a mess and WCW was WCW. The good, WWF pay-per-view main events. The bad, Hogan versus Kidman feud.
Firebomb Kidman.
It is good for the one line of that Kidman has, that who would know more about drawing flies in a pile of shit like you, Hogan, which I do love. The ugly, Goldberg did the unthinkable. He refused to follow the script, which is actually coming up a lot more than I expected it would.
Because it was horrible. It was a horrible angle.
Side bottom, also from Pro Wrestling Only. The good, Mick Foley in the first quarter of the year. Bad, the return of an out-of-place Steve Austin. Yep. Verifying what
you said there.
Ugly, New Blood Rising pay-per-view. This is the one that was held in Canada, and this one is fucking horrible. If you thought Bash of the Beach was ever bad, I raise you New Blood Rising.
Where did it fall in the year, by comparison?
It was 1 month later, I believe.
But wasn't the actual angle dying by that point?
Oh yeah,
the angle was coming to an end by
that point.
By the time they announced the paper,
we're ready for another reset.
Yeah, Russo got bored with this game. He wanted to play fucking Buckaroo now instead. But again, that whole pay per view. Lance Storm was one of the few beacons of hope for WCW when they brought him in 2000.
Never cared for that guy.
Yeah. And the fact they put the three belts on him, wrestling Mike Awesome. This is when they did that horrible match where they changed the rules. They went along Canadian rules.
Canadian rules match.
And then at the end of that show too, there's this really emblematic.
So is that match like generally just a riff on the Austin and Dude Love match where they
clearly, but it was just fucking terrible.
Didn't work as well.
And the other thing too is that there's such a visually emblematic sight at the end when Booker T is still champion. The fans were booing him, if I recall correctly, and as he's there and they're heralding the show and this match and this champion, the fans are in the background walking away disgusted. It's just a really, really sad sight.
I'm just going to mention an absolute ugly here, and I'm going to mention Harlem Heat 2000.
Every time you add 2000 on a tag team, it only gets better. I mean, we learned that.
Techno team.
Lee and G2000.
For anyone who's not in the know, this was the amazing tag team of Stevie Ray and Big T, otherwise known to you and me and our prison, Armored Johnson.
This was just
a fat man at the time.
Oh, he was freaking huge.
He was a very large
Jesus
human
Christ.
Being.
Me and Liam keep having an argument over who's the worst tag team of all time. Liam says it's the Harris Brothers. I say it's Harlem Heat 2000.
The Harris Boys had no merit, and the fact that they were getting pushed to the moon in 2000 is another fuck you to WCW as well.
Yeah, had so many chances in different gimmicks,
and they were dreadful every time. They were never any good.
No.
Why were they never over at all?
Yeah, but Harlem Heat 2000 were fat.
The People's H2O from Wrestling Forum for the good. Mick Foley as commissioner.
Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah, for comedy purposes.
They're enough memorable bits.
Yeah, with his was it gavel?
The gavel.
For me, the Foley as commissioner just always comes back to that thing that 2000 did well, which was just a bit of variety.
Yeah, everybody was in their proper place. Yeah. It seems like at least for the first half of the year, the bad Naked Midian.
Obviously.
Running around willy-nilly.
It's kind of, like, inoffensive to be the bad, though, for me.
Like, hold on, you're saying Naked Midian is inoffensive? Like, by far, one of the most offensive things.
Surely that'll go in the ugly,
wasn't there,
you know?
Like, four appearances by Naked Midian or something like that? It's not really like...
He did appear on one of the pay-per-views,
didn't
he?
No Mercy, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Ruin 87 from Wrestling Forum. The good, Backlash, Fully Loaded, Triple H in general. The bad, WrestleMania, good lord. The ugly, the evening gown match.
Yeah.
Lesnar Turtle, the good, Triple H and Rock both had the best years of their career, the Radicals debut, or the Stuntfest matches. The bad, one of the worst payoffs to a major storyline of all time, with Rikishi being revealed as the guy that ran down Austin, and the ugly watching WCW slowly kill itself. Crummy 97 from Wrestling Forum, the good, state of your mid-card, Vince. Considering the mid-card the year before, the bad Rikishi's heel turn is being maligned here.
Because it was wrong. It just stuck out. It didn't work. Everyone always mocks the whole, you know,
I did it for the Rock. That's what people wrote.
It's a fascinating piece of history. Isn't it interesting to see how at the top of the card the slightest misstep can really just kill momentum?
Yeah, it
did. The
last significant thing Rikishi ever did was at the end of that year when he fell off the cell.
He did, and it was
onto hay.
Even as a kid, that was just kind of awkward stunt. Yeah. It's like, considering the crazy shit we'd seen that year, this was like very safe. Ideally, probably was one of the more dangerous.
I always remember him taking a choke slam and falling back like an erect penis, just like straight as an arrow, and just going wee, and then landing in this puff of cloud hay like a fucking Acme cartoon,
this freaking hay trailer
for the ugly Mae Young giving birth to a hand.
Oh wow.
You know what? It got more of a payoff than a lot of the other gimmicks going around at the time.
At least they brought the sun back. Was it this year or last
terrible.
Year?
It was terrible, but it was also fucking awesome. I'm sorry. But I like random shit like that.
My Fune Jackson, the good. The Rock have won the best babyface title runs of the Attitude Era and SummerSlam. The bad, WrestleMania. Ugly, I did it for The Rock. Notice a pattern? Mr. Pierre. The good, Armageddon, Hell in a Cell. Again, the match itself is actually pretty enjoyable.
I haven't watched it recently, but my thing is that besides the erect penis drop, I'm not, I just don't really remember it. Not even, not positively, not negatively. It was a bloody big thing at the time.
When I watched it back, and I did watch this back not long ago, but it's a really, obviously it's a very strange match. It's
one of a kind. Unique,
It doesn't work. I remember,
I disagree, because the thing is, they get out of the cage, they brawl over the place, it's just manic, and the crowd is red, molten hot.
The ultimate thing is that we had seen insane stuff in Hell in a Cell matches with two guys.
Yeah.
Six guys, you just thought, whoa, six times the menace. Mm. And it turned out to be all fur coat and no knickers. And, you know,
I remember talking at the time, to all my friends, like, well, you know, who's going to take the crazy shit?
Yeah, yeah.
And you looked at it and went, well, not him. Not him. Yeah, not him. Not him. Exactly. Don't know if Rikishi, and Rikishi had already done something. He jumped off the cage.
Yeah,
that was it.
He
didn't, and that's why we all thought it was going to be something to do with Rikishi.
Yeah.
But the other funny thing with, I think about it, I've got to watch it again to check. But you know what's really hard to film? Big multi-man matches. Yeah. You know what else is really hard to film? Cage matches. it might be great for the crowd in the arena, but I can't. I'd have to go back to watch it again. But that must have been a fucking bitch to get on.
Honestly,
I don't think it holds up. Personally.
Well, from that perspective, I would like everybody to rewatch this match. I'm not saying it's a classic by any means.
One of the things I've got to say on that match, just it's a quick addition, is this was the height for me of like WrestleZone.com rumors, where I remember reading that, you know, they were concerned about how they were going to actually do something that was bigger or better than the previous Hell in a Cell, and the rumour was going that they were going to raise the cage away from the floor so that Triple H could pedigree Austin through it into the ring. And I just remember thinking, Ooh. Now that would have been knickers on top of a fur coat.
I have never heard this rumour before. That's the most absurd thing
I've heard. Never heard this analogy before. I'm really scared now.
Fur coat, no knickers.
Oh, wow. Alright, so we're going to move on to our final point here from around the table. Luke Edwards, good, bad, ugly, what are you bringing to us?
It's kind of funny, actually, because we've had a good, a bad, and ugly now, and you're not going to believe this. This wasn't actually planned this way. It's just kind of gone that way, which is quite nice. I looked at it... I ended up looking at it a bit differently in the sense of... I think when I look back on 2000, I know, intellectually, that there were some great matches and some great pay-per-views. I know intellectually that there were some really fucking shitty times in WCW.
Yeah.
But my heart, in that time, in that period, remembers so much stuff that I just fell in love with. And it's stuff like 2000, so that's the start of the APA. Now, when you say APA, you think of the two... No, it sounds... The Acolyte Protection Agency, yeah. The angle aspect, yeah, around it, and how fucking... Not just funny, but genius the concept was. It just worked in every way. It was 2000 was the 24/7 hardcore title and the wacky, wow, shit around that. And don't tell me you don't fucking remember every single one of those wacky skits.
The Houdini of hardcore.
There
Crash
you go.
Holly.
And fantastic. That to me. And some people are going to find these elements bad and ugly, but it just. You know, that was 2000 because wrestling was hot and you talked to your friends about it and you had everything that surrounded it. And I'm going to say that to me what was good was that 2000 stands head and shoulders above every other year, as an over a year, for just stuff that happened around the ring.
Yeah.
Not just on the shows outside of the ring, but in life.
Yeah.
Now, I'm speaking from the UK. I don't know how it was elsewhere in the world. Hopefully, we got listeners around the world. But I want you to think back to 2000. I mean, you guys around the table, you've already started mentioning it in various places, but yeah. 2000 was a time where wrestling was a thing.
Yeah,
it really was a big thing. Before the phrase, a thing, was a thing, ironically. But it was such a big deal, and WWF bore it on their shoulders. For most of that year, even the wackiest shit was taking off. And looking back, that wacky shit doesn't now look, oh my god, I can't believe I like that. Fuck you, I watch any APA random card dealing bit of smoking thing.
You're absolutely right with any random things, because like one thing I'd always, one match, which I strangely like, because and I shouldn't like it, because just because of one of the participants, but the SummerSlam match with Shane McMahon and Steve Blackman.
Yeah!
Which was a really great match. Like, until that, I didn't give a flying fuck about Steve Blackman before or after that match, mm-hmm, but just for that one night, like, Steve Blackman was fucking awesome.
And you can intellectually turn around and say, well, you know, it was the depth of the roster and it was this, but that's not the way I look at it and that's not the way I remember it.
Yeah.
It's one of the few periods in wrestling where I don't remember it with my brain, I remember it with my heart. And that sounds corny as hell and I fucking love it.
No, you know what? And ultimately, because when we came up with this idea for the podcast, I think the problem is that it's one of the most documented years in the history of the business. Everybody knows that Edge and Christian and the Hardys and the Dudleys were great. Everybody knows the Radicals were a big deal. Triple H had a good year, so did Rocks, you know, blah 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 blah. Everybody knows the good, the bad, the ugly off the top of their heads, but the feeling, the emotion, the intangible elements of what this year was to us all individually as fans is actually the good or the bad or the ugly. Because if you're a WCW fan watching that company die, it had to be heartbreaking. If you're an ECW fan and you're watching Bilvis Wesley on your television set, I feel sorry for you because I felt pretty bad myself.
I've got to reset the Bilvis Wesley clock.
And if you're a WWF fan, my God, what a time. Because
just again, as Luke said, we don't know what it was like in America. We're probably just what we were feeling, but probably times 10 maybe, just because that's where it was all happening. But over in the UK, oh my god, like wrestling and in particular WWF was just everywhere, where you could buy, you know, all the t-shirts, all the figures or whatever in a video store, in like a supermarket or something like that. It was just like the magazines were everywhere, everybody was watching it. You had you know your usual wrestling fans watching the shows, and you had casuals who knew the names like The Rock and so on. They would be able to actually communicate with you about such things, and it just felt so big at the time. And I haven't felt that same way since 2000. There's been no year since where I've just turned around and felt like, man, you know what, it's fucking awesome being a wrestling fan right now. And that's what 2000 gave.
It's funny you should say that, because I went through thinking about that when I was bringing up the point, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe it's just that I was at the right age at the right time. Maybe that's all it was. No, we're not all the same age around this table.
No.
But we all got the same sense. Yeah. And that's really nice to know that I wasn't alone, because my friends were the same age. I was concerned that maybe it was just us getting caught up in the ethos, but it has struck everybody in a slightly different way, just from conversations we've had in the past about this. Yeah. But there is that common link and that common theme, and it's WWF in 2000.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, for me, like a lasting memory of WWF in particular and the year 2000 was the video games. Yeah. As well, which we're all going to be able to comment on this one, was, you know, it was the first two SmackDown games that were released on PlayStation. No Mercy released on N64.
ECW got Anarchy Rules out that year. Exactly. Not a great game by any means, but a
WCW
and company.
I know, exactly,
and a video game.
And even WCW had a game, but we won't talk about that. But, you know,
You're referring to Backstage Assault or
God, no, don't even joke. But it's just like, but I just remember the amount of memories I have of 2000 is actually of like those games, watching those shows with my friends, playing those games, you know, doing like all the little season modes and everything, and just like, yeah, it was just like such a fun year in 2000.
Fun for some with video games. I had an N64 and No Mercy came out, and it was the greatest thing ever. Now, I don't know how clearly known this is, but the PAL version of No Mercy that was originally released on launch day, that was the greatest damn thing in the world, and I got it home, and you play it, and it's great, and you get to end of career mode, and it instantly wiped your cartridge. No matter which part of the career thing you did, if you get to the end of it and the credits roll, your cartridge is completely wiped due to a bug. And I didn't care. No, I did care. But I went back to that game store 3 or 4 times a week with my game in my hand. Have you got the real place? What? No, head office have said there's somebody doing something, they're shipping out. Okay, come back for God's sake later, small child. I was a small child, but I must have been short or something at the time. But and I kept going back over and over, but I still kept playing the game, and I still do. I've still got my original screwed up cartridge because they didn't take it back off me. So good times. And they got the replacement one, and then the replacement one didn't have blood in it because fuck you. Oh, you can't win still.
Yeah.
But I remember every single day of it.
I just think, like, you know, my memories of those games, like No Mercy, was just when you and your buddies were so into wrestling at the time that you stopped trying to play to win and started trying to have good matches.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that was like a magical moment. Yeah, it's like, kick out, kick out. Yeah. You know, it's just like those things were just, you know.
I think go ahead, Matt.
I just remember like it being a period where shit like Action Replays, like people figured out codes that basically fucked your game up so much that it moved you to the top of the cage.
Yes!
So that it gave the impression you were having a Hell in the Cell match with a cage top. It was just, you know, this crazy shit that someone spent time figuring out, because we were that desperate for that feeling. But the technology in the game hadn't caught up to it yet. That people were like, "Well, we'll figure a way to make it happen." You know, it's just great times.
It's just the thing that you gotta love about 2000 is everybody goes back. Everyone has their own memories of just certain things of time and place. Again, whether it's just like you're hanging out with your friends, like wrestling on the park and stuff like that. And I do wonder what it's like for different people all across the world, if this is an all-encompassing thing where wrestling was so hot during this period of time and the product was so good.
Absolutely, because it was just that thing of like with school that we went to early, where like a school was so hyped over wrestling. And I'd remember, like, we'd all talk about the Royal Rumble the next day.
Talk about it all day.
All day long.
A few other moments we've got to mention here. Takamichi Noku slammed his face into the floor at the Royal Rumble.
How has that not come up? Literally the definition of ugly.
It's so brilliant.
And just the fact that I don't know whether I like King Jerry the King Lawler or hate him for the fact that he laughs at it after a while. He just goes, watch his face. Boing.
How can you not, though? I mean, I feel bad for the guy, but unlike chair shots to the head, that never stopped being funny.
Raven not being used particularly well is very underwhelming debut after all the potential that you would think. I mean, for the year before, when you have Chris Jericho coming in and the Radicals coming in right at the top, and then you got Raven coming in right at
pretty much by the bottom.
He was coming into an already saturated mid-card by that point, because by having the Radicals in there and the Ascension of every other act, and they were finding everything for everyone, you know, like even Right to Censor was there to, you know, to give Val Venus, Bull Buchanan and so on something to do. So by the time Raven came in, it was just like he was entering into a mid-card that was already chock-a-block full.
I don't think he should have been a mid-card guy. He should have been a top guy. I think he was better than that at the time.
Raven?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's bold. Well, Vince obviously didn't.
Yeah, not tippy top. I'm not saying you should.
I was about to say tippy top of WWE. Yeah. Raven doesn't fit there.
Raven would have worked in that, say, probably Intercontinental title division if they actually followed through by moving Jericho and Benoit up into the main event along with Angle.
I could see an argument for that.
Yeah. If they actually went through and pushed those guys, and Raven would have fitted in perfectly there.
I don't know. I think it would have had to be a different Raven arriving to an extent.
Again, Taz coming in with such a great debut at the Royal Rumble. 1 month later, he's getting beaten up by Boss Man and Albert.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
2000, a year of hope, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, this is the thing. What's funny?
Hits and misses, probably.
Well, this is the thing that's actually pretty interesting.
But they could afford it.
They could afford it, absolutely, and they did. But this is the thing that's absolutely crazy. As much as it is, you know, good, it makes you kind of question when people hyper-analyze stuff today. Because ultimately, a lot of the stuff, I mean, if you look at it, booking-wise, it wasn't always so hot through all of 2000. There's a lot of stuff that was a little bit sketchy.
But I think, as I literally just said, it was a time of hope to an extent, particularly with...
Hold on a second. I believe there's some fucking...
Texas Chainsaw Man.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, but it was a time to an extent of hope, and, you know, it was hot enough that we never actually got to the point of even let down. I don't know about you. I mean, I remember that Taz was jobbed out, but I don't remember caring because everything else was so goddamn great.
Yeah, because it was so fast-paced as well. So even if you got, like, an angle like Taz, where, like, Taz suddenly got buried, you'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, just bury Taz. The very next second, something awesome was happening. Like, it was a completely different match had started, or, like, a promo or something, and you almost kind of forgot about it. So it's just like... That's what it's kind of like. They could afford to make mistakes.
We totally bought into the ADHD programming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's what it was. Yeah, you just instantly moved on.
The network with ECW.
Look, I want to rant about the network, but now's not the time.
I think it's the perfect time.
I think the network came around and they were worth exactly $9.99. That's what they
not
were.
Not that network.
I know you, Pratt.
For what it was okay. They were obviously trying to cash in on what was actually happening in that company at the
time.
Yeah,
the bad stuff at the TV.
Paul Heyman trying to vent his anger. Yeah, I mean, ECW, particularly in the later half of the year, was when it was getting really tough to watch. The first half of 2000 was still pretty solid. It was the second half where you started to really see the effects of what's happening to this company, and you could just tell as you were getting towards the end of the year that this company's not hanging. I mean, the fandom is there. Like, everyone was still loving it, like, as terms of the fans, but just something wasn't right anymore.
Looking around the table, as we're looking to wrap this up, we've talked about the year 2000, we've talked about personal feelings, we've talked about the stuff that we saw on TV, the good, the bad, and the ugly from that perspective. Now that we've kind of discussed everything in one go, around the table, what are your thoughts? Good, bad, ugly?
All told, it's got to be good. There's so much good for me that outweighs everything else. That good.
All good around. For you?
Yeah.
G?
Yeah, I'm absolutely going to agree. It's good. The quality of the pay-per-views, I mean, I didn't think ECW was that bad. I still enjoyed ECW. Yes, WCW was god-awful, but WWF was just, like, sensational for most of that year. And so, for me, it's an overall good year. So, it's nothing but happy memories for me.
Absolutely. From my point of view, good. I can certainly see the people, big WCW fans, that's going to suck for them. ECW fans going to suck for them. I can't speak to the other countries. But for me, good, happiness, joy, positivity for the future with the debuts of the Radicals. Not just that. I mean, it had a whole, what was going to be a legendary Divas division, all coming in during that 2000 period. And we kind of forget about that.
Yeah. Lita, Trish, they all debuted this year.
All debuting that time. Molly Holly. Quite a few others. So, yeah. For me, I can't see it any other way than good from my point of view.
Yeah, I can see that. From an overall, I'm always aware of the overall picture of the business. I can't really say unanimously good. There was a lot of bad that came about. WCW and ECW didn't last 3 months after this year was over. So, I mean, that's... And it's sad. And maybe it was natural selection because, again, 60 million in the hole, 7 million in the hole, whatever it was at the end of this year, neither of them ended well. And neither of them throughout the year was any... great shakes at all. It was a sad time for ECW and WCW. You'd watch it and you'd hope, but there was that sinking feeling of there's a problem coming. The WWF, obviously, from a tunnel vision perspective of WWF, you could enjoy it for the most part, so that certainly gets good.
because you're just talking about WCW, I think now I'm going to take the opportunity just to remind people of just one little thing that was incredibly ugly. Seeing that we're all comfortable, I'm going to slip the finger in. I'm going to mention three words to you, right? And it's got to do with wrestling, but not specifically wrestling itself, right? But it's something to do with WCW. And we almost mentioned it earlier on with a certain individual, but we passed over it. These three little words are ready to rumble.
Oh, God.
Now, for those of you that don't know about this film, this was the exact reason why David Arquette won the WCW title. No other reason, but it was to promote this film, because WCW had cross-promoted this film with, I think it might have been Paramount, I don't know. This film is an abomination, and this absolutely solidifies the ugly part of this conversation and what was absolutely bad with WCW, because WCW endorsed this film. They, you know, a lot of their stars were in it, like DDP, Goldberg, Sting, and so on. And this film, it was infuriating to watch, because we already had things like, you know, Wrestling with Shadows and Beyond the Mat, which were really kind of in-depth documentaries on wrestling that kind of showed it, not necessarily always in a nice light, but in a realistic light. And then we got this putrid pile of ass crap, right, that basically just portrayed wrestling as real, gave us, like, this ridiculous fake wrestler played by Oliver Platt, who I actually like as an actor, but was not believable at all. And
Jimmy King.
Yeah, Jimmy King. It was fucking horrible. And they just depicted all wrestling fans as backwards, retarded children. It was just an absolutely atrocious film. And it actually, in terms of, like, wrestling being a subject matter for a film, it set back that entire idea for, like, about 10 years until The Wrestler was eventually made.
You're not going to hear any defense of Ready to Rumble from me. Yeah. I think that this... I do remember one person at my school who shall remain nameless, because I don't want him getting maligned here, thought Ready to Rumble was like the greatest film he'd ever seen in his life.
I could probably understand if you like, because obviously people like Macho Man and DDP were in it, so you're like, oh wow, they're in a film. But the actual subject matter was so fucking bad. I mean, it's almost to the point where I actually want you to watch it. Not because it's so bad it's good. It's bad because it's bad, but you need to see it just so you know what bad really is.
I'm still waiting on my Jimmy King action figure. I think that eventually we're going to get it in the classics range. You know,
I think for me, I mentioned it earlier and it just comes back to it. 2000 for me, all the matches, all that sort of stuff, it is just about the camaraderie and the, you know... For me, it was a group of mates that were just, you know, I can hook up with now, and we still have a laugh about wrestling. None of us particularly watch anymore and things like that. But during that year, it was a time when everyone was loving it, everyone was chatting about it, and you were never alone as a wrestling fan, because you were always having a good sort of like time about something.
And think of the positives, because we're about to watch that really good 10-man Raw match as
That's a good point. And then Liam's going to put on the Armageddon match as well.
Oh, I know,
fuck him.
Hey! Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for all the feedback. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can give us a review there. Listen to the previous 9 podcasts. For G. John Chase.
Hashtag support S.A. Rios.
For Matt Holt.
Thank you. Bye.
And for Luke Edwards.
I will rule you.
No, you fucker. I'm William O'Rourke, and we are out of here. Dick, dick, diggity, dick, diggity, dog. Quaking. Dick, dick, diggity, dick, diggity, dog.